Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasagay. Because of the declining number of wild salmon in the Fraser River, First Nations are pulling together and supporting the Paddle for Wild Salmon in BC. A new research project in Quebec will examine how cultural entrepreneurship can contribute to sustainable economic development in Aboriginal communities. The Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business will soon be conducting a survey of Aboriginal entrepreneurs and community businesses, hoping it will help shape public policy in the country. An Attawapiskat community member is hoping people will vote for 12-year-old Wesley Prankard's idea in the Pepsi Refresh Everything Canada contest to build a playground in the First Nation in Northern Ontario. And Blackstone is a miniseries about press politics and is being filmed right now and will air on Showcase and APTN early next year. Executive producer-director Ron Scott discusses the miniseries starring Nathaniel Arcand, Carmen Moore, Eric Schweig, Michelle Thrush, and Roseanne Superno. All these stories plus great tunes coming your way right after the news. Here's now Aboriginal news. First Nations are joining the Paddle for Wild Salmon event. The paddle is going to take place along the Fraser River in late October and is being organized by group Salmon Are Sacred. June Quip is a counselor with Cheam First Nation, which is located in the Upper Fraser Valley, and she supports the paddle and will also be participating. Quip says they're trying to bring awareness to the diminishing number of sockeye salmon. A big part of that problem, Quip says, is caused by wild salmon catching sea lice from farmed salmon, which made for a bad season last year.
There's a lot of fish farms in BC now, and the lice that come from the fish from the farms are killing off the wild. We had a really devastating year last year because of the we were supposed to get 18 million fish back and with sockeye, and we only got 1.8, so there's a real devastating year.
Quip says her community is very dependent on salmon, and when the numbers aren't there, the people suffer. She also says they're supporting the implementation of inland fish farms. Stuart Phillip, president of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, supports the paddle as well because he says it's vital to protect and defend wild salmon stocks. He adds First Nations have long depended and continue to depend on the many runs of salmon of the rivers along the BC coast. And Clarence Penye, president of the Stolo Tribal Council, hopes the paddle will bring awareness to the plight of wild salmon and that the paddle will demonstrate that there are lots of people who want to see wild salmon protected by switching to land-based fish farms. A new justice project is about to begin on the East Coast. It's called the Health to Wellness Court and will be established in the community of Elsiebuktog in New Brunswick. The court will deal with crime and its underlying causes, such as mental health and substance abuse. Eligible clients will participate based on offense type and be required to take responsibility for their actions and comply with a treatment plan as ordered by the court. Community elders will help supervise the plan along with medical and mental health professionals. The project was developed by community members along with the Department of Justice and Consumer Affairs and the Department of Public Safety. The 3.5-year-long project will be launched in October. A high Arctic research station will be housed in the community of Cambridge Bay. CTV reports the community of about 1,400 was chosen over Resolute Bay and Pond Inlet. The facility will help researchers explore the cutting edge of Arctic science and technology. In a statement, Prime Minister Stephen Harper said, "By building the research station, we're advancing Canada's knowledge of the Arctic's resources and climate, while at the same time ensuring that northern communities are prosperous, vibrant, and secure." It's not known when the facility will open. The location of the facility was announced on Harper's annual tour of the Arctic. Cambridge Bay is located on the Northwest Passage. CTV also reports the area is of great interest to Canada and other nations that border the region, like the U.S., Russia, and Denmark, with all hoping to lay claim to various parts of the North. The Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business is gearing up to conduct a business survey. Stephen Scott is the research analyst at CCAB, and he says there are three reasons for the survey.
One is because the last piece of research, the 2002 Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Survey, which was conducted by Statistics Canada, is nearly a decade old. So So we need to provide a new baseline as the 2002 Aboriginal Entrepreneur Survey is being cited as a relevant piece of research. Well, much has happened since 2002, such as the economic recession. The second piece is to bridge knowledge gaps. There's a big lack of information on Aboriginal community-owned enterprises, and when you look at economic development, especially from a First Nations perspective, Mother Venerate the communities has done so by hand-owned or community-owned businesses. So this study will be a comprehensive piece of research on community-owned businesses and will hopefully enlighten Canada on what they are, what it takes for them to be successful. And the third piece is that we hope to contribute hard facts which will shape policy for the better.
Scott says, according to the 2002 census, there are over 40,000 Aboriginal entrepreneurs in the country, and he hopes more than 5,000 of those will respond to the survey. The survey kicks off September 13th and will wrap up October 10th, and survey results will be available on CCAB's website by next spring. The Ontario Coalition of Aboriginal People is feeling left out of a national consultation plan on caribou that does not include non-status Indians and Métis in the province. Brad McGraw of OCAP is urging Federal Environment Minister Jim Prentice to include the OCAP constituency in gathering traditional knowledge of the woodland caribou. McGraw says there is no excuse for Environment Canada to ignore non-status and Métis in Ontario, and he adds the woodland caribou are an important part of Ontario's northern forests, and the species is ecologically, culturally, and spiritually valued by Aboriginal people. Ontario Provincial Police in Northern Ontario have been participating in cultural awareness training. A local Kenora newspaper reports the sensitivity course is aimed at peeling the layers of the divide between police and First Nation community members. 24 officers from the Northwest region stretching from Manitoba to Thunder Bay attended the training, which was held at the Healing Center on Oshkondagon Bay. The training program looked at the impact residential schools had on First Nation communities, and the program also examined the background of area treaties and the history of those agreements to help build an understanding within the officer. The Pacific Trail Pipeline Project in BC has received a cash injection from the federal government to train about 600 Aboriginal workers. The feds put in about $9 million for the training program for the $1.2 billion Pacific Trail Pipeline Project. The funding is part of the government's Economic Action Plan. The pipeline is a 463-kilometer natural gas conduit to connect the proposed Kitimat LNG gas liquefaction plant to export terminal at Kitimat with the Spectre Energy Gas Transmission System at Summit Lake, north of Prince George. At an annual meeting of the Institute of Public Administration of Canada, Assembly of First Nations Chief Sean Atlio challenged bureaucrats to help move a public policy project. He's calling to have the policy project replace the Indian Act. Atlio spoke at the meeting on August 24th before an audience of about 700 public servants who work for several different levels of government from municipal to federal. Atlio also told the crowd that a first step to respecting First Nations would be the endorsement of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. He also pressed for legislated funding to guarantee per-student funding of Aboriginal schools is equal to the rest of Canadian schools. In Quebec, researchers will be studying how cultural entrepreneurship can contribute to sustainable economic development in Aboriginal communities. Elizabeth Kane is the lead researcher of the project, and she's from Université du Québec à Chicoutimi. She says the five-year research project will combine traditional knowledge with innovative ways to sell local art.
One part of the research project that we do, because there's many parts to that project, is to try to find a way of making new, innovative objects in design objects with native artisans who have all the traditional knowledge, or to bring that to innovative and new product in one part, and then try to find a way of production and distribution of those products who would respect their own way, their own traditional way to sell and produce and sell their product. Because if we try to use a standard North American model of mise en marché, selling product, that doesn't work with the philosophy of the native people. We already tried that, and we see that that doesn't work. We have to work on the other side, see what are their traditional way of sharing and selling their production, and try to invent a new model of that processes.
The research project has received about $1 million to be spread over 5 years from the federal government. Voting for Wesley Prankard's charitable idea to build a playground in Attawapiskat will be wrapping up August 31st. The 12-year-old sent his idea for the Pepsi Refresh Everything project when he learned the community didn't have a playground for the children. Rosie Kustachin is a community member in Attawapiskat, and she's all for Wesley's idea.
Oh, I think that's unbelievable. I think that's an amazing idea. We never had a playground here for a long time. It used to happen so many years ago, but that was so long ago, a long, long time ago. It eventually disappeared, our playground. But when the Reds came here, there was no playground here. It came up many months ago, and I think that's where you get the idea that, yeah, we don't need a playground here.
Wesley wants to build a $20,000 playground in Attawapiskat. His idea can be found in the $25,000 neighborhoods category on the Pepsi Refreshes Everything Canada website. The filming of our First Nations miniseries is underway. The miniseries is called Blackstone and will premiere early next year. Ron Scott is the executive producer and director of Blackstone. He says the series is about res politics.
Blackstone is a look, a fictional look into the power and politics of a fictional Indian reserve in Canada. And it's a one-hour drama that profiles different scenarios and follows the storylines from a chief and a wannabe chief and their families and relatives.
Scott says they're currently shooting a truancy scene.
Right now, we're shooting a scene at a store that you might find on the res, just a simple store that's been around for a while, run by a family that lives and works on the res. And it centers around a scene in which one of the teachers that they've brought in from the city, the kids have gone through another teacher, so the kids have nothing to do during the day because, of course, their teacher quit. And the kids are at the store just hanging around, and the new chief, who was just elected to kind of bring reform and change and kind of do her best to make an impact, has hired one of the local kind of tough guys to go round up the kids from the local store to bring them to school. So the old-fashioned truancy officer. With a res spin on it.
Watch for Blackstone on Showcase and APTN in early 2011. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
Bone digger, we gone.
Kimberly Dawn with Bone Digger. First Nations in BC are pulling together and supporting the Paddle for Wild Salmon. The declining number of wild salmon in the Fraser River are also the subject of the Cohen Inquiry, which is set to hear evidence throughout this fall on the sockeye salmon's life cycle, perspectives on Aboriginal law, wild salmon policy, and harvest management. The Paddle for Wild Salmon event wants to bring awareness to the declining number of sockeye salmon in the Fraser River, as well as solutions like creating inland fish farms to avoid fish lice infestations in wild salmon stocks. June Quip is a counselor at Cheam First Nation, as well as an elder and longtime activist who was one of the leading activists to challenge government fishing policies on the Fraser River, and she spoke with Bomsida.
The Paddle for Wild Salmon is actually a program or an organization that's, really trying to stop the farm fishing because of the impact it has to our wild salmon. There's a lot of fish farms in BC now, and the lice that come from the fish from the farms are killing off the wild. We had a really devastating year last year because the... we were supposed to get 18 million fish back, and we only got 1.8. So just a real devastating year where we lost out on a lot of salmon, and many of our people are, dependent on salmon, especially in the Fraser Valley. We've always been accustomed to having that salmon, and when we don't have it, we suffer. But the Paddle for Wild Salmon, the group there, they've done a lot of research with Alexandria Morton. And what they've done, or what they're trying to do, and I know there's groups to get it, so that they move the farms inland out of the marine waters so that, there's not such a big impact with the sea lice and for the wild salmon. And what we're really feeling is that, the fish that come back and go back into the ocean, they're very tiny, they're trying to raise the Paddle for Wild Salmon. They're trying to raise awareness amongst, the people and the government, to just encourage more fish farms, which were much, I guess, because of its impact. Not only that, we lose all the wild salmon. We don't have the rights to the fish anymore, and that's a real concern for us. And so that's the concern we have about, the farms. And I think when...
So in the push for inland fish farming, do you think that would create an economic opportunity for perhaps your community in the Fraser Valley?
I don't really think so. I don't know whether we would have the... Well, it could, but I'm not sure whether we... because we are fishers, and the government said years ago that we weren't farmers, we were fishers. We were given a very small piece of land. I mean, we only have, our population of 500 members with about 300 living on reserve. We only have 1,200 acres for our whole reserve, so our land base is pretty small. But just to support the, getting the farmed fish away from wild salmon is enough of an incentive for me to support it.
And what other things has your community or yourself been doing to support more inland fishing or
even really, there's not even any inland yet with the farmed fish. All we've done so far is because we're our council, we're spread so thin with everything that goes on here that, we've taken the opportunity to support the Paddle for Wild Salmon and the people that are working on that. Number one, they'll get a lesson than we ever would because they're non-native and the work that they're doing, so it's easier for us to just support them.
That was June Quip of Cheam First Nation in BC's Fraser River Valley. A new research project in Quebec will examine how cultural entrepreneurship can contribute to sustainable economic development in Aboriginal communities. The lead researcher is Elizabeth Kane with the Université de Québec à Chicoutimi.
The one part of the research project that we do, because there's many parts to that project, is to try to find a way of making new, innovative objects in design objects with native artisans who have all the traditional knowledge, but are to bring that to innovative and new product in one part, and then try to find a way of production and distribution of those products who would respect their own way, their own traditional way to sell and produce and sell their product. Because if we try to use a standard North American model, mise en marché, selling product, that doesn't work with the philosophy of the native people. We already tried that, and we see that that doesn't work. We have to work on the other side, see what are their traditional way of sharing and selling their production, and try to invent a new model of that processes.
And I also understand that you have some other First Nation partners in the project. Can you tell me who they are and just a little bit about them?
Yes, we have many Native partners. So we have the CEPN. It's the Quebec Conseil en Éducation des Premières Nations. So because that work, we would like from that work to create a school program for young natives to develop the entrepreneurship spirit, but in their own philosophy and tradition. And we would like that program to be created and incorporated in the program, the high school of native school. So they are a partner. There's three native community who work with us. There's five. Excuse me right now. So there's Innu people, Ilnu, Atikamek, Abenaki, and there's the organisme Présence Autochtone, who is an organisme who make the promotion, diffusion of native arts, who organize a big event in Montreal in June of every year. So they will work with us also. And there's the Native Center Study of the University of Quebec with partner. So we are many. We have 22 Native partners on our partner committee who takes decision with for that research.
Well, that sounds like a really exciting project. And where did you come up with this idea?
I am myself a Native from the Wendat community, and I start at 16 years old to interest my friends in a project of studying and trying to reproduce all the objects from my community with making a research on the technology of those objects, how to collect the matters we need to do them. And then when I went to be a design teacher at the university, I pursued that passion to the native design practice, who are very, very updated today, because those practices always take care of nature through their design practice, and always use organic material and send them back to the earth. And I thought there was a lot we could learn at the university from those practices. And then the project went bigger and bigger, and now we are six researcher with a $1 million grant for 5 years, and we hope the work we will do will really help the native artisans who still have all those beautiful quality of designers.
And since you're working with other First Nations groups, and you yourself are First Nations, who will the research belong to?
The program we are with is a CURA program from the CRSH in French, the Canadian Council Research. So CURA means Community and University Research Alliance. So that's why there's a partner committee where there is 22 persons, there's six university researchers, and the rest of the people are all from the community who are partners. And all the action we do is decided by that committee, who, of course, see how that research can serve their community. And all the result of the research is for the community. and the research is made with the community.
That was Elizabeth Kane with Université du Québec à Chicoutimi. Now here's Missy Knott with Go, Go, Go. Push for Votes is on for the Pepsi Refresh Everything Canada contest. The contest is where people pitch a charitable idea to get funding from the company, and then people can log in and vote their favorite ideas online. One of those ideas is to build a playground in Attawapiskat First Nation in Northern Ontario, and the idea was pitched by 12-year-old Wesley Prankard, who lives in Southern Ontario, and he spoke with Bom Sidal last week. And Rosie Kustachin is a community member in Attawapiskat, and she's also a mom and a grandmother, and she thinks Wesley's idea is a great one and is crossing her fingers that his idea comes out on top.
Oh, I think that's unbelievable. I think that's an amazing idea. And we never had a playground here for a long time. We used to have one so many years ago, but that was so long ago, a long, long time ago. It eventually disappeared, our playground. When Wesley came here, he found that when Wesley came here, there was no playground here when they came up many months ago, and I think that's where you get the idea that really need a playground here.
And how do you think a playground would help in the community?
Oh, it would help a lot, for sure.
So I have another question, kind of weird question, but how does it make you feel that someone from the outside of the community is doing this?
Well, we are very happy and very proud of him. I was talking to a mother when we were along the river there while the kids were, we were standing, and then we made a mention about Wes's idea, and we were laughing, and we were really happy and very proud of him. And somebody doing this from down south, from out of town, he must have a big heart, and he must be very brave and courage to do this, and to help us to help up the community. And I'm very inspired by Wes, especially the True North Aid are helping out WAPS.
And in what ways are True North Aid helping in the community?
Well, when True North Aid first heard about WAPS situation, they heard it from a woman, but the woman from Manitoba area, because she was part of a group from grassroots who working together, has volunteering. Started up, me and my sister Jenny, along with another community member, wanted to spread awareness about the situation at Wapsket. It's not just, it's all about everything, the housing and the homelessness in our community. There's about 1,000 people that are homeless in our community, and a lot are overcrowded in our reserve. There's maybe 50 people in a 3-bedroom housing. It's a lot like in here, and the houses is overcrowded. That's why the Beers helped a lot to donate our trailer for rooms for that are overcrowded, especially the homelessness here. So we do have a temporary homeless shelter, and they have families there. They have a lot of young people that are homeless. So that's where, when True North Aid heard about the awareness, and Bob contacted our community, and through volunteer work, that's when he found me, and then that's when everybody started meeting, and eventually came here. Bob came up first, because he wanted to see firsthand, and then he went back, and then that's when he came back again with the team. And he wanted to see, because Bob didn't believe that this is happening. He had to see firsthand. So that's why when he came here, he was really shocked and simply overwhelmed that this is happening in Canada. And especially in reserve, but isn't that only happening here? It's happening in other reserves as well, and along the communities of James Bay. So this is not new. There's a lot of changes that are like this. But for example, at Wapit, this when that's when True North Aid are working with us.
That was Rosie Kustachin from Attawapiskat First Nation. The Canadian Council on Aboriginal Business is hoping the results of a survey it will soon be conducting will help shape public policy. Stephen Scotts is a research analyst with CCAB, and he tells us about the survey.
The Aboriginal Business Survey is a research study that is being conducted by the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business in partnership with a research group in order to build awareness of Aboriginal business owners' needs, concerns, and success.
And why is the CCAB conducting that business survey?
Three reasons, Jennifer. One, because the last piece of research, 2002 Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Survey, which was conducted by Statistics Canada, is nearly a decade old. So we need to provide a new baseline, as the 2002 Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Survey is still being cited as a relevant piece of research. Well, much has happened since 2002, such as the economic recession. The second piece is to bridge knowledge gaps. There's a big lack of information on Aboriginal community-owned enterprises, And when you look at economic development, especially from a First Nations perspective, much of the revenue generated in communities is done so by band-owned or community-owned businesses. So this study will be a comprehensive piece of research on community-owned businesses and will hopefully enlighten Canada on what they are, what it takes for them to be successful. And the third piece is that we hope to contribute hard facts which will shape policy for the better.
And who exactly is this survey going to help?
The audience is Canada in general. It will be widely available on our website, ccab.com, in March 2011. But of course, we hope to direct it towards corporate Canada as well as government so that what they can do to provide support that caters to the needs and concerns of Aboriginal business.
And when you're talking about shaping policy, what do you mean by that?
The survey will cover topics such as business goals and objectives, business characteristics, business strategies, business growth, financing, and support. And we hope that this will provide hard facts, which we mean it's a study that won't be based on case studies or anecdotal evidence. This will be actually a comprehensive survey that will cover Aboriginal businesses nationwide. So these findings will come in the form of a research report, which will hopefully get a lot of media attention and a lot of government and corporate interest.
And how is the survey going to be conducted, and who's going to be involved other than CCAB?
So the survey, there will actually be two surveys to this big study, the first being the Aboriginal Entrepreneur Survey, and the second being a survey for community-owned businesses. The Aboriginal Entrepreneur Survey will be largely conducted by Environics Research Group, who recently released a study on the Urban Aboriginal People Survey. We went with Environics Research Group because of that. They did a stand-up job with the Urban Aboriginal People Survey, and they provided us research expertise a number of times. They're a great group of people there. We also will be working with Ecosys Solutions Consulting. They are an Aboriginal-owned enterprise, which will assist us with the Community Enterprise Survey. So the Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Survey will be about a 20 to 25 telephone survey, which will go out nationwide to Aboriginal business owners. Items from the 2002 Aboriginal Entrepreneurs Survey done by Statistics Canada will be on this survey to permit somewhat of a long-term comparison. Now, this study, in order to get a representative sample, we've had to build a list of Aboriginal entrepreneurs, but we're also still reaching out. So if you are an Aboriginal entrepreneur out there listening, check out our website at ccab.com for more information and your chance to make your voice be heard. And the other survey will be conducted with CEOs and general managers of economic development corporations and community-owned enterprises. The survey will have a separate questionnaire. Topics will be somewhat similar, but just structured a little bit differently. And we hope to cover all Canada and each of the three identity groups of First Nation, Métis, and Inuit. And this will be done by telephone, but also supplemented by in-person interviews.
Okay, and you were saying you have compiled a list of Aboriginal entrepreneurs from coast to coast. How many on that list?
4,400, but we're aiming to get beyond 5,000. According to the 2006 census, there are over 34,000 Aboriginal entrepreneurs out there. Just not all are easily accessible through online databases or through procurement databases or things like that. Easily accessible, I think we can get beyond 5,000, but other than that, that comes down to our outreach effort with our media campaign and reaching out to other Aboriginal organizations and communities.
And when will you begin conducting the survey?
September 13th. We will begin fielding the survey, and this will go through until October 10th.
And when will survey results be ready for people to look at?
Survey results will be ready, available on CCAB's website, ccab.com, in March 2011.
That was Stephen Scotts, research analyst with the Canadian Council on Aboriginal Business. That was Peacemaker with Sacred Ground. Shooting for Blackstone is underway in northern Alberta. Blackstone is a mini-series more or less about the trials and tribulations of res politics. Ron Scott is the executive producer and director of Blackstone, and he can tell you about the mini-series better than I can.
Blackstone is a fictional look into the power and politics of a fictional Indian reserve in Canada. And it's a one-hour drama that profiles different scenarios and follows the storylines from a chief and a wannabe chief and their families and relatives.
So who wrote the series and whose idea was it?
The series is based on a teleplay, a script by Gil Cardinal of Crisis of and adapted by myself and a writing team into a one-hour pilot that was aired on APTN last fall. And the series is done, we have a team of writers, including Gil, myself, and two other writers as well.
So I understand you're on set working right now, and do you want to describe what's going on right now?
Sure. Right now we're shooting a scene at a store that you might find on the res, just a simple store that's been around for a while, run by a family that lives and works on the res. And it centers around a scene in which one of the teachers that they've brought in from the city, the kids have gone through another teacher, so the kids have nothing to do during the day because, of course, their teacher quit. And the kids are at the store just hanging around, and the new chief, who was just elected to kind of bring reform and change and kind of do her best to make an impact, has hired one of the local kind of tough guys to go round up the kids from the local store to bring them to school. So the old-fashioned truancy officer with a red spin on it.
Oh, wow. I don't think that'd go over well, eh?
Go over well, but most of the scenarios and the background stories are all based on stories and anecdotes that we've heard from all over the res, different reses across Canada. So it wouldn't go over well, but at the same time, this is something that's actually happened somewhere at some time.
Okay, with no teacher. So where is this being shot?
We're shooting in northern Alberta. In and around Edmonton, so most of the shooting happens in that area.
Okay, so you really missed out on the big black fly and mosquito season.
Yeah, we actually have, obviously we've had to deal with that, but the mosquitoes still are bad and not fun.
Well, they're clearing up in my neck of the woods. Well,
that's great.
So is there anything else you'd like to say or add or tell us about the series, when it's going to air and when, where?
It's going to air in 2011 on Showcase and APTN. It will be, if anyone's looking for more information, we have a website, blackstonetheseries.com. And it goes in and shows some media things and gives a good description of the pilot. And just kind of tracks on where we are going with the series, and there's some good information up there already.
Oh, I forgot to ask, who is starring in the series?
Our main actors, we have several ensemble casts, but the main actors are Carmen Moore, Eric Shway, Nathaniel Arkand, Gordon Tatusis, Michelle Thrush, and we have a newcomer, Roseanne Summernall. We have Steve Cream Mollison. Andrew Menard is of our cast this year, and we have a group of ensemble actors that.
And so, have you called some of the local community or communities for youth for their roles?
We have extras from all over the reserves from the Edmonton area. Alexander, I think we have one of our actors is from Alexis, and of course Nathaniel's from Alexander, and I think we had a little guy. Extras out from Enoch the other day. And so, you know, the community is well represented from around here for sure.
That was Ron Scott, executive producer and director of miniseries Blackstone, which will be airing in early 2011 on APTN and Showcase. You've been listening to Bombsidaw with Jennifer Ashwasige. Bombsidaw is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bombsidaw means walking together in Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombsedaw.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bombsidaw.